Okay, so I'm gonna read you some texts and some poems that I wrote, kind of like homages to food, and some of them are for dishes that I made for this banquet that was my interpretation of a medieval meal. Part of the medieval cuisine was interested in making dishes that looked like other things. So artifice was a big part of that type of cooking that I'm addressing in these texts. And artifice and also the idea of bodies being inside of surprising bodies. So,
That is a boy who shaved their leg. That is a girl and a boy. I'm gonna say that's a boy, I think. What are you? It's a fish that was
made, sculpted to look like chicken, but flavored with lamb, or a cockatrice, which was a half of a pig sewn to the bottom half of a castrated rooster, or a peacock that was killed and then skinned and then made into a pie that was then sewn back into its own skin, or figurines of your enemies made in sugar and eaten by your guests. So the first course for the banquet that I made, that I'm going to read to you about, was a smell. And this is the text. Ancient Romans often opened a feast with a smell as the first course. Sometimes flowers and fragrant leaves would be strewn on the floor or the table rubbed with mint. During a feast hosted by Emperor Elagabalus, his guests were showered so thickly with flowers that some of them suffocated to death. Doves, slathered in scent and released to flap about a room, were often used to diffuse the scent. The scent I'm delivering to you is on a sugar and gum paste bird flower. It's scented with an imitation of the patented smell by the British company Bodywise, a manufacturer of sexual lubricants. You might know them as the people who make liquid silk. Not unlike the sweat of gladiators that infused expensive aphrodisiacal Roman lotions, this smell is a pheromone derived from male sweat. When it sprayed onto furniture and debt collection letters, it caused an avoidance of chairs and a 17% increase in successful repayment of debts. And this next one I'm going to read you is a poem I wrote for Medusa. I made a large pie with many different kinds of meat in it and sculpted it into the shape of Medusa's head. And her hair were all these delicious different types of sausages. Medusa. For Freud, you were just a nub reclining on an Uzbekistan couch. The genitals of many roiling, hissing, homoerotic bodies wrestling with the rest of them. You put them to work, paving roads, cooling cellars, guardian statuary, and pyramids. But in Jericho's painting, they boarded you, your creaky gap-toothed planks leaking, black sea onto green bodies. No one noticed your head. G ferreted away the heads of other men. David sewed the arm of a different corpse onto the bathtub body of Marat. As it rotted, it kept falling off. You and Athena have never been so close. Can I name an island off of Colombia after you and use it as a prison or a national park? Can I use your body as a weapon, tear it off and wrap it like a tan, leather present, sprouting hair and pimples, polished surface of your saddle skin? So this poem actually has a couple footnotes because I'm very fond of footnotes. The first one is that the nub, where the poem opens with, for Freud, you were just a nub. The nub is actually a Navy term for a failed sailor. It stands for a not useful body, which I think is amazing. Obviously, the Jericho painting is the Raft of the Medusa. And that little story inside the poem about David sewing the arm of a different corpse onto the bathtub body of Marat, that I think is true. When he made the painting of the death of Marat, he kind of restaged Marat's actual dead body as if it was in a bathtub. But the way that his arm had fallen kind of outside of the bathtub put a lot of like weight and started to rip off of the corpse as it decomposed. So they had to go to the probably to the prisons or the equivalent of the morgue and get another corpse and chop the arm off it and sew it onto Marat's body so they could do the painting. Keep doing the painting until the painting was done. So it's very similar to that cockatrice dish I was describing to you with the half the pig sewed to the castrated rooster. I really like saying the word castrated rooster. Yeah. So another dish I did, I'm kind of skipping through, was this dish called Beggar's Chicken, which is a Chinese dish where you take a whole chicken and you rub basically a 5-spice rub on it. So there's a couple different spices. And then you wrap it in lotus leaves and then you encase it in clay. And you bake it for a long time, either over a fire or in the oven. You can do this with fish or even like mushrooms or whatever you want to put in clay. Takes a bit longer. Instead of cooking a chicken for an hour, you cook it for about 2 hours. I think it took me 2 hours and 15 minutes for it to be all the way done. But it stays really, really moist. And the flavor of the lotus leaf, and which is kind of earthy, and the spices really get infused in the meat. And the story of the dish is that some beggar stole a chicken from a landowner and they were being chased, and so they just buried the chicken in the riverbed. And they came back late at night for it and they started a fire and they just dug the chicken out and couldn't be bothered to wash the dirt off. So they just threw it on the fire and then it became this delicious dish. So when I made this meal, I sculpted the beggar's chicken I made two of them because it was for 30 people, this meal. I sculpted them into the Koch brothers and then smashed their faces open and people got to eat their chicken insides. Okay, and this is the text I wrote to kind of introduce the dish. In the world of appearances, Americans for prosperity are very prosperous and free. They roam around wherever they like, scratching the dirt and pecking seeds, fulfilling their need for protein with ample insects in the bountiful fields of the country. Some virtuous and exceptional hens grew to enormous size and were much applauded for their marvelous girth. A chicken of this size must be cooked with great pomp and ceremony, rubbing salt and spices underneath its plucked skin, massaging it in like powder on a baby's butt or a tender gynecological hand. These spice-rubbed chickens were then diaper-wrapped in lotus leaves and encased in clay likenesses of very important men. The principle of magic operated like this. The likenesses would fuse through heat and osmosis into the flesh of the hen. When smashed open with a common hammer and consumed, the taste of destroyed wealth itself. As the chickens baked in their own moist juices, lost greasy memories of childhood bubbled up. The time these men spent as free-range chickens was beyond their immediate recollection, but what they did remember was that as young brothers, they had once fallen in love with the same woman. In order to control her affections, they each made an effigy of her, one from rags and a snippet of her own skin. The other one was 3D printed from high-quality polypropylene. Such was the power of mimesis that both methods were actually equally effective. The poor woman was led in a pins and needles dance between the two of them. At the ridiculous sight of her running around the field like a chicken with her head cut off, the brothers roared with never-ending laughter and agreed that the puppet they had made was much better than the woman herself. Just trying to decide what else I should read. I think I'm going to end there with the food poems and read you a different poem that's not a food poem. This one's about worms. Kind of. It's called Worms for You. And it's kind of about, it's kind of the you in the Worms for You is kind of semi-dedicated to this asshole I dated a while ago. Many, many years ago, actually. If you think it's you, it's not. It's a different asshole. But then it became about other things, like symbiotic relationships. Worms for You. I'm in the convent of my master, cloistered in his approbation. Is it true, or am I imagining, that Dmitri Tsafendis's knife clotted shut on Verward's blood, like a sandpaper shark melted to a waterproof pillow in the sun? Am I imagining, or is it true, that long after I left, you threw out the garbage in a tall apartment chute, and an umbrella broke you from above? They say there is no divine justice, no deus ex machina, but I beg to say another story, one where I have a worm too. Her name is Impatience. She's Haitian and contagious as a Caribbean on a long, slow drum. The longest worm measured 24 feet from nose to tail, that is really a clitoris, a pen, signing its name illegibly, golden curls around its seal. Being a hermaphrodite Ouroboros, it eats itself out. Being a clitella, my worm is a princess in a fairy tale. They give you the things they give to bovine and sheep. Drink with milk, sleep well. It might make you sick, it might knock you out, but your body will be your own. I have heard this selective story before. With enough speed, anything becomes a weapon, so I'm always in a hurry, hurtling towards the fleshy part of your hand. In 1921, Abby Warburg went mad. He knew the doctors planted worms in his family, like the peasant plants his land. He saw the crates glowing with phosphorescence, jellyfish lashed to light mutations paths. These are the interests of science, that generous, well-meaning man. The doctor woke Abby to say, "These are delusions you have been dreaming. It's time to wake up." Strangely endearing from inside that pine-stemmed helmet mask, he shored up his sanity inside a giant worm, a rattlesnake that lost respect. In the cities, no one is easily impressed.
From them cold nights on that block, I remember the struggle, I remember the shine. I remember their faces when they saw me shine, nigga, I remember everything. Outside with no shirt, I remember, nigga. Talk loud in that church, I remember, nigga. Nigga stole all my work, I remember, nigga. Kirby took my licking coat, I remember, nigga. The plantation, yeah.